Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I am Chinedofo in Washington, in for James Butte. Today is Monday, August 21st, and here are some of the stories we are covering. ECOWAS concludes another meeting in Niger as the junta leader proposes a transition timetable.
General Tchani also announced the forthcoming holding of a national dialogue to draw the outlines of the transition. For him, the latter should not exceed 3 years.
Eswatini's King Swati III will not hold talks with those he calls, quote, terrorists, unquote. Gambia freezes all government foreign travel for the rest of the year. Liberia's ruling party accuses the main opposition of being an ally of Russia. Gabon's opposition parties agree on a single candidate ahead of Saturday's vote. Zambia's ruling Zimbabwe's ruling party holds final campaign rally ahead of Wednesday's presidential elections.
ZANU-PF is ready to yet again receive the full endorsement and mandate of the people of Zimbabwe. We need more time for us to build our motherland.
And today is the International Day of Remembrance of and tribute to the victims of terrorism. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Niger's military junta has reportedly proposed a 3-day transition to democratic rule. Coup leader General Abdourahmane Tiani said the military did not overthrow elected President Mohamed Bazoum to confiscate power. Meanwhile, a delegation from the Economic Community of West African States, or ECOWAS, met with ousted President Bazoum and had talks with the junta over the weekend in Niamey. Here's VOA's French to Africa reporter Abdul Razak in Niamey with the latest developments from Niger.
General Abdourahmane Tchani met on Saturday with the ECOWAS delegation led by the former head of state of Nigeria, Abubakar Abdulsalami. The delegation left Niamey this Sunday morning without delivering any conclusion from the meetings he had with the actors of the Nigerian political crisis. Moments after his meeting with the ECOWAS delegation, the junta leader addressed the nation through a televised message. He indicated his willingness to dialogue on the threat of military intervention envisaged by ECOWAS to restore constitutional order. He warned those who want to undertake it, it will not be a walk in park because they will face 26 million Nigerians supported by sister countries like Burkina Faso and Mali, he said. General Tchani also announced the forthcoming holding of a national dialogue to draw the outlines of the transition. For him, the latter should not exceed 3 years. This Sunday morning, a demonstration brought together thousands of junta supporters who came out to give them their support. The day before, Saturday then, it was thousands of other young people, this time in particular, who stormed the front of the main stadium in the Nigerian capital to register as volunteers in order to help the junta in all actions, particularly in view of the military intervention envisaged by ECOWAS.
That's VOA's Friend to Africa reporter Abdul Razak speaking with us from the Niger capital, Niamey. In Zimbabwe, the presidential candidate of the ruling ZANU-PF, Emmerson Mnangagwa, said voters will return his party to power, despite opposition political parties accusing it of ruining the country. Rutendo Mawere in Harare has the story.
The ZANU-PF held its last presidential campaign rally about 310 kilometers from Harare in rural Shurugu in the Midlands province. President Emmerson Mnangagwa addressed the crowd to drum up their support for the vote on Wednesday.
ZANU-PF is ready to yet again receive the full endorsement and mandate of the people of Zimbabwe during the 23rd August Harmonized General Election. We need more time for us to build our motherland.
President Mnangagwa came into power through a military coup in 2017 and was declared winner of the 2018 elections. During the campaign rally, President Mnangagwa also warned international observers in the country and said they should stick to their mandate and not meddle in the country's electoral processes. A ZANU-PF supporter who was at the rally, Rosemary Murwizi, believes their party will romp to victory.
I believe, strongly believe, we're going to win the election without any doubt, because we've got our president behind us in everything that we dream of. He's a good leader, and everything he does, he thinks about his people. And you can see the development that he has done here.
However, opposition supporter Jeff Chaiteshi tells VOA that ZANU-PF has failed and that he wishes for a new government.
He has failed the country dismally, politically, socially, and economically. The country is fractured because of ED Mnangagwa's government. There's no need for them to need another 5 years. We need change in Zimbabwe. We need change of government. We need new leaders, new ideas.
ZANU-PF's main rival, the Citizens Coalition for Change, CCC, will be holding its last rally on Monday in Harare. Zimbabwe will be holding presidential, parliamentary, and municipal council elections on August 23. For VOA, this is Rutendo Mawere in Harare.
This Saturday, August 26th, Gabonese voters will go to the polls to elect a president and members of parliament. President Ali Bongo Ondimba, whose family has ruled the country for 56 years, has amended the constitution several times to guarantee their continued rule. 5 of the 19 opposition candidates agreed last week to support one candidate. Frank Joktain is a Gabonese human rights and democracy activist. He tells James Bate that he's excited about opposition unity and hopes it will lead to victory.
I think that it's good for Gabon to have a fresh beginning, and I'm happy to see that the opposition was able to find a candidate that we will rally all around, and hopefully he will win this election, and not only win it, but this time take the power and govern Gabon for the interest of the people.
Of course, the opposition coming together, that is something that is sometimes strange in other African countries. The opposition has found it difficult to come with a single slate. So do you think this time around they have a chance?
Yes, they have a chance. They have to come together in order to win, because the people that we have in front of us, they are people who do not want to relinquish power. So if all the opposition goes different ways, we will not have the opportunity to govern. So, yes, to have one person, to rally around that one person, I think will allow us to win that election.
President Bongo Ondimba and his family have ruled Gabon for many, many years. What do you make of changes that have been made, particularly to the constitution?
The changes that they made to the constitution is to make sure that they will continue to remain in power. That's why they changed the constitution even at the last minute. And that is why the opposition have no choice but to rally together and to find one candidate in order to make sure that this time he will not succeed in what they are trying to do.
Now, the recent change to the constitution reducing the 7-year term to 5 years, what is the impact of that?
I think that's a good thing, but I think we should not focus too much on those 5 years. I think the changes he made, for example, we used to have a two-round election. Now we have only one-round election. That means that a president can be elected in Gabon with less than 50% of the vote. So when you have so many candidates running for the same position, you can end up having like a president who will be elected with only 19%. And I think that's what we need to focus on. Other changes that he made also is that he put together the presidential election and also the legislative for the congressmen and senators. He put all that together. And I think it's to confuse the Gabonese electorate. So what we need to do is to focus on the election, and the opposition need to win that election.
How would you describe the playing field in terms of coverage? Is the opposition being covered in the national media?
No, the opposition is not covered because, I mean, as you know, most of the media are government-owned. Like, for example, all the pictures are only Ali Bongo all over the cities in Gabon, and we barely see the opposition presence on the field. But we are doing our best through, you know, Twitter, through social media, in order to expose what's going on over there.
Frank Joktin is a Gabonese human rights democracy activist. He was speaking with James Batte from Toulouse, France. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofor in Washington, in for James Batte. Today is Monday, August 21st. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We're on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Still to come on our program, Samson O'Malley's Sports. King Eswatini III of Eswatini has told the South African Development Community that he does not negotiate with terrorists. He made the comments at the just-concluded SADC summit held last week in Angola. SADC had been urging the king to open national dialogue with the country's pro-democracy groups. This as campaigning for Eswatini's August 23 parliamentary primary elections is underway. The opposition United Democratic Movement says that by refusing to peacefully engage with the opposition, King Eswatini is instigating violence. Eswatini's government spokesman Alpheus Nxolomo told James Buddy the king has said that the national dialogue will take place after the September 2023 parliamentary elections.
His Majesty King Eswatini III only had one responsibility, that was just to report to other head of states within SADC about events that are taking place in the country. He did not only report on the elections that are happening, he also informed the head of state about the pending national dialogue which will take place after the elections. He also informed the head of states about the national celebrations the Kingdom of Eswatini will be embarking on September 6th, which will be the 55 years of our national independence and 55 years of His Majesty's birthday.
Well, you mentioned the pending national dialogue. SADC has been interested in brokering such a dialogue, but yet we understand that the king told SADC that he cannot dialogue with terrorists.
The king has spoken what he has spoken before those leaders of SADC, and of course SADC was not initiating or leading the process of dialogue in the country. Dialogue remains within the domain of Emaswati, following their constitution, and the dialogue shall be done according to the provisions of the constitution. His Majesty only had the courtesy to report about the dialogue to the SADC head of state, and of course, I cannot delve into the details of isolated statements.
So is the king still open for dialogue? Because there's an implication that by not making his government available for this dialogue, he is perhaps instigating or bringing about more violence.
The king has always been interested in dialogue, and the dialogue does not belong to the king per se, but it belongs to the nation. So therefore, the dialogue is going to take place as announced immediately after the national general elections, which we are looking forward to around October to be concluded.
So let's talk briefly about the elections. The concern is the representation. So what did the king tell the SADC leaders about this coming elections?
The king cannot determine the outcome of the elections or the composition or the representation which Amaswat in their various constituencies will produce out of the elections. He only informed the SADC head of states that the elections are taking place as scheduled and as per our provision of the national constitution. As to how the parliament is going to take shape is not in the hands of the king, but it is in the hands of the electorate.
Alpheus Chumalo is the Eswatini government spokesperson. He was speaking to us from the capital, Mbabane. Gambian President Adama Barrow has suspended all government foreign travels, including for himself, for the rest of the year. Government spokesperson Ibrahima Sankere said travel to meetings where Gambia's participation is mandatory and trips that are fully funded by external sources are exempted. He told James Buddy that the travel freeze is motivated by global events and complaints by Gambians about excessive foreign trips by government officials.
The president is conscious of the inflation trend across the world due to a variety of factors. Massive inflation, we have poverty, and so many other issues. I think it makes common sense sometimes to sit down and then put your house in order. So precisely what President Barrow has done, is to suspend temporarily, at least rest of the fiscal year 2023, all foreign travels across the spectrum. He begins with himself, the vice presidency, cabinet ministers, permanent secretaries, every civil servant under the care of the Gambia government is experiencing these travel freeze.
So I was going to ask, the president can travel and say places that the United Nations and the African Union Summit and ECOWAS Summit. Is that correct?
While that is correct, the president has in fact decided that this year's United Nations Assembly meeting, he's not going to go. He has instead delegated his vice president, because the presidential entourage is normally very, very elaborate and very expensive compared to the vice president. So instead, the vice president will be representing the Gambia instead of the president.
How much does it affect Gambia's budget?
Likely, a lot of Gambians have been complaining that there is excessive traveling among senior government officials. So the opposition, human rights activists, you know, community leaders have all been saying that the government has to actually scale down the rate of travel, particularly given the situation in Ukraine, the absence of grains and so many other things, the problem with fuel and fertilizer and health conditions and stuff like that. So obviously, if you want to curtail that, there is no better way than actually putting a freeze on travel of senior government officials. And by the end of December, we would have saved millions of dollars in that area.
Ibrima Sankere is the Gambian government spokesperson. He was speaking with James Bate from the capital, Banjul. A new report by the Africa Center for Strategic Studies says there were 6,225 reported deaths tied to Somalia's Al-Shabaab militia group in 2022, a 50% increase from the previous year, as the world marks International Day of Remembrance of and tribute to the victims of terrorism today, Monday. The United Nations says it is committed to supporting and amplifying the voices of victims and survivors. Moreno Jambo reports.
The Global Terrorism Index 2023 report indicates that terrorist attacks became more deadly last year, killing on average 1.7 people per attack in the same year compared to 1.3 deaths per attack in 2021. The Sahel region in sub-Saharan Africa is now the epicenter of terrorism, with the region accounting for more terrorism deaths in 2022 than both South Asia, the Middle East, and North Africa combined. And as the world marks International Day of Remembrance and Tribute to the Victims of Terrorism, under the theme Legacy, Finding Hope and Building a Peaceful Future, some terror survivors who live to tell the story still live in fear. Lillian Munyiva is a Kenyan who survived the 1998 Nairobi bomb blast that targeted the U.S. embassy.
On that day, I was at cooperative building on the 12th floor working with the Teacher Service Commission, and I was expectant. My baby was born 3 weeks after the bomb blast. It was a normal day. We woke up, we went to the office normally, the way you just wake up and go to the office. We didn't think that anything bad would happen. We're busy with our normal routine. And actually, that is when the first blast happened.
United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres says the UN pays tribute to the extraordinary work of the victims and survivors who have resolved to use their experience to bring about change. Munyiva says most survivors are still traumatized, and some mothers gave birth to children with lifetime health conditions. She tells her story to fellow terror survivors for closure.
We have never healed at all. After the blast, after 2 weeks, from my community, we normally bury after 2 weeks. And it occurred to me that this would be my burial. And that really hit me so hard. All those people are still very hurting. The wounds are very, very fresh.
In the past few months, Kenya has experienced a surge in terror attacks that have left at least 30 security personnel dead in the coastal and northern eastern parts of the country due to Al-Shabaab ambushes. Kithure Kindiki, Kenya's cabinet secretary for the interior and administration of the national government, told the Parliamentary Committee on National Security, Defense and Foreign Relations that the government will enhance patrols in affected regions.
We must continually commend our security officers. We have lost many of them in some of these engagements.
Vladimir Voronkov, the Undersecretary General of the United Nations Office of Counterterrorism, says the agency is today launching a legacy project that will feature victims and survivors of terror across the globe to tell their stories.
The United Nations Office of Counterterrorism is launching the Legacy Project, and your documentary gallery through social media to showcase how victims and survivors are creating a positive legacy.
According to the Global Terrorism Index 2023 report, the deadliest terrorist groups in the world in 2022 were the Islam State and its affiliates, followed by the Al-Shabaab, Bacholistan Liberation Army, and Jamaat Nusrat al-Islam wal Muslimin. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Sacramento, California.
And it's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. I'm Gino Rofo in Washington, in for James Butte. And here's Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports with the first leg of the preliminary round of the CAF Elite Club competition, the CAF Champions League campaign, which got underway this past weekend. Tanzania champions Young Africans earned an emphatic 2-0 victory over Asas Djibouti at the Azam Complex Stadium in Dar es Salaam on Sunday. Two-time champions Enyimba of Nigeria were defeated 4-3 by Libyan club Al Ahly Benghazi in a highly entertaining match at the Martyrs of February Stadium in Benghazi. The Big Bullets of Malawi fired themselves into a comfortable position ahead of the return leg with a 2-0 victory over Equatorial Guinea's Dragon FC. In Ghana, Medema Sporting Club's Jonathan Sowore scored in the 22nd minute to secure a narrow 1-0 victory over Nigeria's Remo Stars, who will be hoping to reverse the slim advantage a week from now in the return leg. Morocco's AS FAR had to work overtime for their 1-0 away win over a resilient AS Kukara in Togo in a match that could have gone either way. While in Angola, Primeiro do Agosto managed a slender 1-0 victory over Congolese Giants AS Vita. Three fixtures concluded in stalemates on Sunday in Benin. Nothing could separate Cotton Sports of Garoua and Cote d'Ivoire's ASEC Mimosas as they shared the spoils in a goalless draw, with the same result in Guinea as host Hafia were held to a goalless draw by Generation Foot of Senegal. Congo's Otoho FC could not capitalize on home ground advantage as they were held to a 1-1 draw by Sudanese side El Merreik, who will go into the second leg with a slight advantage. The return leg of the first preliminary round of the CAF Champions League will take place next weekend, with the kickoff times and venues to be announced in due course. And now to athletics. Day 2 of the World Athletics Championships in the Hungarian capital, Budapest, saw continental glory for some African athletes. Uganda's Joshua Cheptegei delivered a devastating last lap to win a third successive World Championship 10,000 meters gold on Sunday in a time of 27 minutes, 51.42 seconds, despite barely competing over 25 laps in the last 3 years. 20-year-old Lesile Tabago of Botswana also brought glory to the continent, taking silver in the men's 100 meters. In the process, Tabago set a new national record of 9.88 seconds behind gold medalist Noah Lyles of the United States, who took the title in 8.83 seconds.
It really shows that the continent has a lot of potential. You know, looking at the likes of Ferdinand and Akani, for me, I really wanted them to have this medal before me.
In basketball, Cameroon made history on Sunday by winning their first continental-level competition after beating Senegal 80-74 in the finals of the FIBA Olympic pre-qualifying tournament in Lagos, Nigeria. And that's it for this Monday's edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a great Monday. And that's it for this Monday, August 21st edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for beginning your week with us.
Greetings. This is VOA's Sunny Young. Brighten your day by tuning in the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. You can also follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and VOAAfrica.com. It's the Sunny Side of Sports, right here on The Voice of America.